Hi, this is Russ Taft.
Hi, this is John Olifanti.
Hi, this is John Schlippen-Petra.
Hi, this is Kim Boyce.
Hey, everybody, Stephen Curtis Chapman here, and you are listening to Jesus Freaks Final to Digital.
Hi, I'm Jason Huddle, host of Jesus Freaks Final to Digital. Before we get into this week's program, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for downloading this episode and giving us a listen. If you really like what you hear, we'd love to have your support. How can you do that, you say? Well, I'm glad you asked. Simply visit patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a monthly sponsor. Now, you can do that for as little as two measly dollars per month, or you can go higher and get special perks, like advance access to episodes when available, the opportunity to submit questions I will ask our artists on future episodes, and even your very own Jesus Freaks t-shirt. Again, that's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And hey, if you'd like your business or organization to become a sponsor of this program, let us know by visiting our website, JesusFreaksPodcast.com, and click on the Become a Sponsor link at the bottom of the page. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
Hi, this is Russ Taff, and you're listening to Jesus Freaks, Vinyl to Digital.
New Song frontman Russ Lee grew up not knowing a lot about Christ, but when the time came for him to give his life to God, Russ was ready.
And so I went just right down front in front of the pulpit, and he spoke for another minute or two, and then he leaned over the pulpit and said, "What are you doing down here, boy?" And I said, "Well, you said if you want to get saved, you should come down here in a minute, and it's been a minute." So it's been more than a minute, so I came down here.
And that marked the beginning of a storied music career that included fronting groups like Truth and New Song, as well as his own solo career. But through it all, the blessing hasn't been lost on Lee.
So I got saved in 1980, and 3 or 4 months later, I was on a tour bus, and God has allowed me to do this literally for 40 years. That's unbelievable to me.
Join us this week as we talk to Russ about his faith, career, and what he's learned along the way.
But here we are having this conversation, and I realize what you offer to the Lord in your attempts to do what's right, God gives it back to you.
That's coming up right now on Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a preferred podcast of Way FM and part of the newreleasetoday.com podcast network. I'm your host, Jason Huddle.
People get ready. There's a train.
The one, the only, Russ Lee, one of the most famous singer-songwriters in Christian music from the 90s through today. Thank you so much, Russ, for being on the show today. It is an honor.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thanks for doing this. We appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. So we'll get into New Song. Obviously, that is your bread and butter, the one that the gig that you are most well known for on top of your own solo career. But we'll get into all that. But first, I just kind of want to get into your faith and how you came to know Christ. I understand it is an incredible story.
Well, you know what? I think I wrote a song a few years ago called Miracles that says, "I believe in miracles because I'm a miracle myself." And that's the reality of my life. I grew up in the Bible Belt, but I was unaware of what it really meant to have a personal relationship with the Lord. I was kind of raised in a Christian community, but my family was very dysfunctional, and not intentionally. My mother loved us very much, but my mother suffered with mental illness her entire life. And my father, as a result, he became an alcoholic. And so there were 4 of us kids in a very broken home trying to survive. We were all just trying to get by, and I was the oldest of 4 kids. And so, we would get off the school bus not knowing if we were going to have food or electricity at our house.
Wow.
So, we were always a little nervous about what was going on around us, but we were kids and our parents loved us. So it wasn't like they were intentionally abusing us. When my mother was with it, she was great. But when she wasn't, we had to kind of parent a little bit. So By the time I was 13, I was working. I was working a job for one of my neighbors because I thought that if I had money, I would be happy and I would be safe, because I thought that's the thing that's missing is money. We don't have enough money at our house. So I started working for a neighbor of mine. And then and that caused me to spend more time with older people. And as a result of that, I started using drugs a little bit. By the time I was 15, I was partying with those guys and running with them. And by the time I was 17, I was dealing drugs. I wasn't a drug addict because I was the oldest of four kids and I felt very responsible for my siblings. And so I never wanted to be out of control completely. So I wasn't a drug addict, but I was dealing drugs. And really kind of at the end of my rope, I just looked around me at what the people that I was running with, what their lives were like and what they were becoming and what they were choosing. And I was choosing the same thing and heading the same direction. And, you know, I was playing guitar in bar bands for drinks, and I was watching people who were younger than my dad becoming like my father with the same struggles. And so I just realized I didn't want to live that life. I didn't know why I was here, but I thought there had to be more than that. So one night in desperation, I was really miserable. I was kind of at the apex of my misery. I was driving home and I was listening to the Rolling Stones saying, "I can't get no satisfaction" on my high fidelity 8-track stereo system.
Oh, nice.
And so it was so funny because it hit me so differently that night, because I realized that what I was looking for, it was like an epiphany. I realized what I was looking for was satisfaction. I wanted to just know everything was okay. I wanted to be able to like exhale and relax and know that everything was going to be okay. But I was breaking the law. I was in a broken home. I was broken myself. I mean, I just realized that what I was doing was leading to nothing. And so, but more trouble. And so that night I turned my stereo off and I did something that I don't think I'd ever honestly, seriously, authentically done as an adult. And that is I prayed and asked God to show me what was missing from my life. I didn't even know who the real God was. I had traveled around the world at this point. I played trumpet and was in band in high school and, you know, jazz bands. And, you know, I was involved with music from a very early age. And so I had traveled around the world and I had seen, you know, I had seen a lot of things as a teenager, but I always came back to the fact that there had to be a God in heaven. This the primordial goo could not have become the complexity that is life, you know? And so I always believed that there was something going on above us, but I wasn't sure what it was. And I, you know, so that night when I prayed, I tell people I wasn't necessarily looking for Billy Graham's Jesus. I was just looking for, I was looking for a truth, you know, I was looking for something to show me what was missing. And so I prayed that night and basically my prayer was, "God, I don't know who you are and I don't know how to find you, but if you're God, maybe you can find me. And if you're really there, could you find me? Because I don't know what's going on. I don't know why I'm here, but I must have been put here for a reason." And that was Thursday night. Saturday, a friend of mine who'd never been to my house, because if you grew up in a small town and your mother is struggling with mental illness and your dad's an alcoholic, people don't let their kids come over. So it was a rare sound out there in the middle of nowhere in Nopome Valley where I grew up. But someone knocked on my door Saturday about lunchtime and I went to the door and it was a guy that I'd grown up with whose family seemed to be perfect, whose life seemed to be perfect. I always used to compare myself to him. He was my friend, but I was very envious and jealous of how good his life seemed to be, you know.
Sure.
And he was standing on my steps and he had another guy with him and he stood there and told me basically that he had felt the same way I had and that he had talked to the pastor at Hopewell Baptist Church, who was a customer of his family's business. And that pastor had told him about Jesus. And he said, "Russ, you're going to think I'm crazy, but Thursday night," which is the night that I had prayed, he said, "Thursday night I talked to Bill Walker and he told me the same thing you did when we were little," which confused me. And he said, "Russ, Thursday night, I repented of my sins and I asked Jesus to forgive me. And I realized I had been sinning against God and ignoring him. And I realized something was missing." And he said, "You're going to think I'm nuts, but Russ, my life was changed Thursday night and I'm going to be baptized Sunday. And I wanted to know if you'd come with me to church and watch me get baptized, because you're the first person that ever told me anything about Jesus." Well, that was shocking to me because I didn't know what he was talking about. But he reminded me that when we were little kids, my mother would send me to Vacation Bible School, I think to get me out of her hair. When I went to school, I realized that people actually went on vacation. I thought that all those people on Disney's Wonderful World, you know, the Wonderful World of Disney or whatever, I thought those people were just paid actors. I thought, you know, that can't be a real place where people go. And so my buddy, you know, he shows up at my house, tells me he feels the same way I feel, and tells me that he really felt like he was supposed to come and talk to me. He said, I really felt like I was supposed to come and tell you this, because when we were little, you used to tell me Bible verses. Well, my mom couldn't take me to Disney World, so she sent me to Vacation Bible School because it was free. They gave snacks to kids, and you know, but they also taught you Bible verses and songs if you learned prizes. So I learned Bible verses and songs because little country poor kids love prizes. So I had memorized Bible verses, and I would go back to school in the fall, and my friends would talk about Six Flags over somewhere, and I would tell them about baseball and fishing and Vacation Bible School, because that's what I did all summer. And my buddy reminded me that when we were younger, I had told him about, I had quoted John 3:16 to him. I was really just trying to prove that I was smarter than everybody, but I had told him that God loved the world and he sent his son, and if you believe in him, you won't perish but have everlasting life. He said, do you remember telling me that? And that when he said it, I was like, yeah, I was just like a parrot. I was just repeating information, you know? And he said, well, Bill Walker told me the same thing you did when we were little. And he said, and it's real, Russ, and my life has been changed. And I felt like I was supposed to come and tell you that. And I want you to come with me to church and watch me get baptized, because you're really the first person that took the time to tell me anything about Jesus. And I knew that God had sent him to my house. It was obvious that. I mean, that was just too obvious. And so I wasn't relieved. I was terrified, because I realized there was a God in heaven that was watching everything that I did. And he heard my prayer and he sent someone to my house to get me, you know. And so I still didn't understand grace and I didn't understand all that. But I was like, oh, no, there is a God and I'm supposed to be doing something. So I went to church with him and he made me sit on the second row because he was pumped about getting saved. And I was there with his whole family, who I kind of knew, but not really. And I watched him get baptized. And then the preacher preached, and I don't remember his sermon topic, but at the end, he said, if you're here today and you realize that that's what's missing from your life is a relationship with God the Father through Jesus Christ the Son, he said, I want you to come down front and meet me in a minute, and I'm going to pray with you. In just a minute, I'm going to invite you to come down front. Well, I didn't know what a Baptist preacher minute was. I didn't know that meant like he was going to preach a little while longer, and then the choir was going to stand and sing Just As I Am, and he was going to invite people to come forward. And I didn't know protocol. So I just realized that God had brought me to church and that he was speaking to my heart, and I knew I was supposed to respond. And so when he said that, I waited about a minute and then I stood straight up. I didn't know what else to do. And I just walked down front. And I realized when I started stepping over people that they looked shocked. And so I went just right down front in front of the pulpit, and he spoke for another minute or two. And then he leaned over the pulpit and said, what are you doing down here, boy? And I said, well, you said if you want to get saved, you should come down here in a minute. And it's been a minute. So I, I came down here.
I never saw a man that walked on water. I never heard a voice could calm the sea. Raise the dead or feed 5,000. But in my heart, I do believe. In a desperate situation, drowning in a sea of my own sin, and it would take a miracle to save me. That's when I reached toward heaven, felt someone touch me. I looked up.
And you know what? He laughed, and then he began to weep. And he stopped the service and he shared Christ with me and said, "Do you realize that you've sinned?" And I was like, "Yes, sir, I do. And a bunch of these people know I've sinned because I've sinned with some of these people." and he said, "Well, do you realize that God loves you anyway, but he doesn't want to leave you like that? He wants to make you right so that you can have a fellowship. You can have a relationship with him." And I said, "Well, I do now because you told me that. You told me that. And I've seen it in my friend's life." And I knew that my buddy looked different. He was different. I knew it. I'd known him since we were little, and we'd run around together in high school, and he was a drummer. We had played, gigs together. But the thing was, he was just different. I just knew it. I saw it in him. And so I went forward, and that pastor prayed with me, and I committed my life to Christ, and I brought my little brothers and my little sister to church, and they got saved. And my parents were thrilled for us and relieved, I think, because my mother and dad kind of knew what I was involved in, but they didn't feel like they could preach to me about much. Mm-hmm. And so my life just changed that day. And I started singing. I quit playing in bars and I got rid of my drugs. And I started singing in the choir. And I was at Hopewell Baptist Church singing in the choir in a Christmas cantata. And some guy was visiting and he heard me sing. This was a few months after I got saved. He heard me sing and he came up afterwards and introduced himself and said, "Hey, I travel with the music group and we do Christian music and you should be singing. You're a good singer." And I was like, "Well, I like to sing. I wouldn't say I'm a good singer." And he goes, no, "You could do this. You could do this and I can help you." And so 3 months later, I flew to Dallas, Texas, and got on a tour bus. And that started this whole crazy thing of God just shaping me. And when I showed up, my accent was so thick that this was a group that did tourism shows. They did concerts for the state of Florida, but then they would do church concerts on Sundays. When the owner of the group heard me speak, he was like, "Yeah, we either have to get rid of him or work with him because he's like Gomer Pyle. We can't let him." So one of the guys in the group, one of the guys in charge said, "I believe in you." And Dave Williams was his name. And he said, "I believe in you. Here's a whole bunch of tapes of a guy that used to be the MC. And we recorded all the shows. We were doing Hershey Park. They were one of the summer bands at Hershey Park." And he goes, "We recorded all these shows. I want you to listen to him. And I want you to emulate him. And the next time that the boss sees you, he's going to see something completely different." And so he believed in me and encouraged me. And I didn't want to go back to my old life. I was in college. I had started college that fall, but I hated it. I didn't even know what I was doing there. I just thought, "I'm not going to teach classical music in elementary school. I have no desire to do that. Who would listen to me anyway?" So I was studying music in school, but I loved music, but I felt out of place. And so when this guy showed up and gave me that opportunity and offered me a job, he auditioned me and he gave me the job if I wanted it. And I got on a plane and flew to Dallas, Texas, and got on a tour bus and started this whole process of training. And God just began to put people in my life who were really good at this. And the next thing I know, Roger Breland had heard me sing, and he began to contact me about joining the group Truth. The Four Hymn guys were leaving, and he wanted me to come in and be the road director and take Mark Harris's place in Truth.
Some big shoes to fill.
Well, I know. It's tough. I don't think I ever did it. But I did go out on the road of Truth, and we had just some great time. And it was just a continuation of this great training and the confirmation of this calling that God's given me to do this. And, and then through that relationship, I met the guys in New Song. And then I went on the road with New Song for several years. And then I started having kids and I had a whole bunch of little kids. And I was realizing that I started realizing I was sacrificing my family on the altar of ministry. And I had a great ministry around the world, but no ministry at home.
Yeah.
So I signed a solo recording contract with Capitol so that I could, it was Sparrow at the time.
Yeah.
So that I could have more control over my schedule and my touring schedule. Because as a member of group, as you know, you have to go when the group goes. So,
right. We talked with your successor in New Song, Michael O'Brien, early on in season one of our show. Yeah. And he said this same exact thing, that the demands of the group, the demands of the life, he was being successful, but it was killing his family life and his marriage.
It will. And it will. If you're not careful, and if you're not all called to it together, and the family doesn't move together, and you as an artist, you have to really work hard to include your family in your ministry, if that's what it is. You know, mm-hmm. if it's just a career, to me, that's not enough reason to sacrifice all these people and ask them to sacrifice. My children grew up having to, you know, celebrate their birthday on a different day, or mm-hmm. my wife and I have to go, you know, sneak away a couple of days and a different day than our anniversary. And we, you know, my kids have made so many concessions, and my family have made so many concessions. And New Song was really going well. I mean, even prior to Michael O'Brien, we were charging harder before Michael got there, before I left, and we were after Michael came. So, you know, at that point, we had had 17 or 18 top five songs, 13 or 14 number one songs. We'd been nominated for all these awards. We were playing all the festivals. We were as busy as we could be. And I realized that, you know, that I was on the road 210 days a year, and my wife was at home like a military wife with a husband deployed, you know?
Yeah.
And I just didn't feel like, and even though she was very supportive, she has always been incredibly supportive, just felt like it was unfair to her, especially since our children were small. And I was seeing her struggle to make the adjustment, even though she was not asking me to do anything.
Sure.
And so I felt like it was necessary for me to come home and to lift up her arms, because for so long she had been looking. Came home and you know, it gave me such great opportunities to connect with my kids and to have them involved. So, you know, as a solo artist and touring as a solo artist for many years, I was able to take my kids with me. I took my family with me around the world. For a year and a half, we traveled and gave away concerts in third world countries and did missions work and raised support. And it was fantastic. And my kids literally traveled everywhere but Antarctica. And they spent weeks in Africa and Australia, and you know, they've been everywhere, Eastern Europe, and they've been just everywhere, Western Europe. They've been able to do a lot of great things, and they've experienced those things. And we've been able to do that as a family. My kids were running my merch table and bossing adults around, volunteers around, where they were 10, 11, and 12 years old.
I love it.
You know, because they knew how to do all that stuff. And sure. they loved it. And they go with me today. As a matter of fact, I still do some solo things. And when my kids can go, they want to go. And when New Song's close, my kids are all there. They still love, you know, to them, it's Uncle Eddie and Uncle Billy, and you know, it's their New Song family. So, you know, I really feel like God honored that. And then a few years into it, after my wife had a pretty intense battle with cancer, she had gotten the all clear, and she had been cancer free for about 2 years. And Eddie called me one day. We were working on a song together for a New Song record, and Michael had gotten off the road, and they had a few guys filling in, you know, and Eddie really hadn't found the guy to take Michael's place, who had taken my place. And so Eddie called me one day, and he said, "Look, you've done all these things. You have to have gotten this out of your system. Why don't you pray about coming back and helping us finish this thing well? Because you know, we were still in great relationship together. We still were great friends. And it wasn't like I'm mad because I left because I was mad at anybody. I just wanted to make my family a priority. So my wife and I prayed about it. And she said, you know what, Russ, this is what you're called to do. And that's calling has not changed. And you should go do it. You should go do this because everybody's okay here. We don't need you to hover over us. And we don't need a helicopter husband and a helicopter dad. We need you to go do what you're called to do and to flourish spiritually yourself. Just go do it. And so in 2009, I got back on the New Song bus and the first week in February of 2009. And I walked into Winter Jam and Toby Mac was headlining. And I walked into Winter Jam with New Song and it was like I had never left. It was unbelievable. And so God just continued to honor that and bless it. And our relationship and our desire to do ministry has never been stronger.
That's incredible. And I think it's great that you guys are still so influential in Christian music today. And in fact, I saw you guys at Winter Jam a few years back and Arise, My Love. And I know you probably get tired of singing it, but I'm telling you, there's something about hearing you guys sing that song live. It still gets me.
Well, thank you. You know what? It never gets old because it's truth. It's good Christian orthodoxy at its best. Yeah. So it's just good truth, you know.
Yeah.
But and also audiences respond to that song. God has his hand on that song, and so
for sure
you kind of know what those songs are, and we've tried to honor that. I keep telling Eddie Carswell, who wrote that song, I don't know what you were doing or where you were when you wrote "Arise, My Love," but you should go back there. You just need to go back there and sit down a minute because that song is just ridiculous.
Guys, we'll get back to our interview with Russ Lee in just a moment. But first, I want to take a moment to let you know that I know, just like about everybody else listening to this program, that sometimes life can leave you with more questions than answers. That's why things like truth, friendship, and hope are so very important. I want to invite you today to join a New Hope Worship Center online. They can help you find the answers to life's biggest questions. They have live streaming services every Sunday morning at 10:45 a.m. Eastern Time on the New Hope Worship Center YouTube channel. There you'll receive the word, have an opportunity to worship, and pray. You can also watch services at your convenience at newhopewc.org. And if you need to speak with someone, please call them at 704-786-0155. They would love to hear from you. That's 704-786-0155. I encourage you, check out New Hope Worship Center services. Your life will be changed. And now back to our interview with Russ Lee.
I appreciate that. I'm very humbled and honored to be able to actually sing it night after night because it's a classic. I mean, I'm a part of Christian music history and I can't believe that, you know, and God has allowed me to do it. So I got saved in 1980 And 3 or 4 months later, I was on a tour bus, and God has allowed me to do this literally for 40 years. That's unbelievable to me. I cannot believe that God has allowed me to do this. I can't believe he'd let me do anything, but the fact that he's allowed me to do this for so long with such great guys over the years is just humbling and awe-inspiring. I'm still inspired. Now I feel like I know a little more. Now I've got a few more miles on me. I kind of understand this thing a little better than I ever have, you know.
That's incredible. Yeah, I was going to ask you, because we sort of jetted right through your salvation and how you came into Christian music. So let me, if it's okay with you, I'm going to back up a little bit.
Absolutely.
I was thinking about the fact that, yeah, you got saved, and within a very short span of time, you're on the road singing for Christ. And then not long after that, you're in New Song. So what was that like as a whirlwind kind of thing for a young Christian trying to come to terms with, you know, his past, his salvation? Now he's bringing people to Christ. What is that process like for you?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I did jump on the bus, and I was a very new Christian. But two things happened. Number one, I had kind of inferred a little earlier, when my buddy came to my house, there was a guy with him. That was a guy named Gary Miller, who is an evangelist and a pastor and a great singer himself. But Gary Miller was this student and worship pastor at Hopewell Baptist Church. And the pastor, when David Vassie had gotten saved, the pastor introduced him to Gary because he was the student minister. And David said, "Well, now I'm a Christian. What am I supposed to do?" And Gary said, "Well, you should read your Bible. You should pray." And he began to disciple David like immediately, like the next day. He said, "And you should tell others." And David said, "What do you mean tell others?" And he goes, "Well, who do you know that needs to hear what happened to you?" And David said, "You're the first person I thought of." And so Gary said, "Well, I'll go with you. Let's go to his house." And so that first time that I really stood there on the steps and talked to my friend, Gary Miller was there with him. And when I went to the church, he's the guy that pulled me into music and invited me to his house. And to be honest, when I got saved and started reading the Bible, I had 6 million questions. Mm-hmm. And Gary and Kathy Miller just kind of spiritually adopted me. They spiritually fostered me. So Gary would come home from work at the church, and I'd be waiting on him in his driveway with my Bible and say, "Okay, but what about this?" And Gary would say, "Well, let's go in the house and let's give me a minute to get a glass of iced tea. And let's come out here and talk about it." So he was very patient with me. The wonderful thing is we've stayed great friends over the years, and I've done some things together. But Gary really discipled me. So we had some intense discipleship and fellowship. He just kind of opened his heart and his home and his life to me. And he was the real deal. And he helped me get started and grounded. And then when I went on the road with this group, the group had a staff pastor. He was our spiritual mentor, if you will. His name was Dan Matchy. And Dan Matchy was the bass player for Jan and Dean. Do you remember that group?
Earth
City, Beach Boys, and all that.
Yeah.
Well, Dan had left that life, and he was a bus driver and a bass player, and he toured with Jan and Dean, and they weren't touring anymore. And so Dan started working for this company that I was with, and this group that I was with, and they had hired him to really just as a pastor for the group. And he wasn't on the road with us all the time, but he was there available for us. And he knew that I was a new Christian. And so there were several people in the band that were very established in their faith. They'd been saved a long time, and they helped me, you know, they helped me. And then Dan Matchy really then came alongside my friend Gary Miller, and he discipled me. So, and Dan Matchy went on to become the Orlando County Jail chaplain, and he oversaw all the ministry that happened there. And now he's in Colorado doing the same thing for a prison in Colorado, but which made him perfect to disciple me. You know, his prison ministry mentality was perfect to disciple me because I came out of the same place. I would have ended up there probably if I hadn't been rescued, you know. And so I was discipled early on and really trained. And I had some good people speaking into my life, like Dave Williams, I shared earlier, because Dave came to me and said, "Look, instead of taking all your speaking parts away, in 3 months, this other guy that was in the group, he's leaving. In 3 months, you're going to become the MC for the group. You're going to do all the talking. And I was terrified. He said, listen to these tapes, and we're going to meet, and I'm going to help you, and you're going to be the MC. And sure enough, he did. And that did a huge things for my confidence and just, you know, what God was planning in the future. And then as I went through that, I just going back over what had happened to me. And one of the guys in the group said, I was like, I don't know how to MC a Christian concert. And he said, well, you know, you just explain the songs a little bit, talk, make transitions happen. And then he said, and I said, well, what about when you like sharing the gospel? Oh my gosh. And he said, well, just tell people what happened to you and tell them that God wants to do it for them. How hard is that? It was the saxophone player. He wasn't a speaker. He's like, come on, man. How hard could it be? Just tell them what happened to you and then tell them, ask them if they want the same thing. And sure, that's how it started, you know? And so now here we are years later, and God's just continued to bless it and to use it. And it's been extraordinary, but it was overwhelming at first. But it was funny because, you know, when you look back at it, you go, okay, I might've been overwhelmed or felt like I had just been thrown into the deep end without a life preserver and not knowing how to swim, but God had everything I needed, all the resources around me to really formulate and understand my faith and to grow in my faith and to establish that very solidly, you know. And then also, he had the right people around me to grow me musically and to help me develop this calling that he had given me. So God's had me in this school of training, you know, early on.
I am a Christian and my name is Pilgrim. I'm on a journey, but I'm not alone. Jesus is with me and he goes before me. Yeah, his love surrounds me. He's one step at a time for now. Just keep your feet on the ground. Don't lose your way chasing the crowd. It's where your road begins. Don't stop, don't settle in. Just tell yourself there's something more than this. Just tell yourself there's something more than this. Everybody say,
give me a favorite new song memory.
Man, you know, there are lots of those. One thing that's pretty interesting. So before I joined New Song, I was on the road and then I went to work at PTL. I was one of the group directors at PTL for one of the groups that they sent out to do ministry and who did concerts on the grounds. And I helped coordinate some of that stuff and live music, you know, for Christmas. And I did a lot of those things. I only filled in on TV some, but I got to do things like host camp meeting with Howard and Bestel Goodman. And I got to do all night gospel sings with all the heroes, Russ Taff and Brian Duncan and Sweet Comfort Band. And, you know, I got to do all, and Bob Carlisle and Allies. I got to do all these events with all these amazing people. And which really helped me. I met Roger Breland at PTL, actually. They were there recording a live video, and someone said, hey, I want you to go meet this guy because he needs to hear you sing. I'll never forget it because I sang for him and he goes, well, you're pretty good. You're no Steve Green, but you're pretty good singer.
I love it.
Yeah. And now, you know, now years later being friends with Steve and looking back on that, I realized, you know what? You're right. I am no Steve Green. Anyway, so I had some great memories and I actually met the New Song guys there, but I didn't, you know, it was just in passing. But one of my favorite New Song memories, I became a youth and worship pastor at a church in South Carolina. I had gotten off the road a little bit, and I'd left PTL, and I was working in a church in North Carolina. And then I went to work in a church in South Carolina. I was still doing solo things and concerts and stuff, but I was working in a church because I felt like I needed to be more established. And I was in South Carolina, and this pastor hired me and said, look, there are only two things that I require. I was the student pastor. He said, two things. One, you have to take the kids on a ski trip to North Carolina because they love that. They love it and they look forward to it every year, I can't ski. I'm terrible. Honestly, any ankle sport is dangerous for me to be a part of, but I took the kids and they loved it. He said, and the second thing is you have to take them to see New Song at Greenville Memorial Auditorium. Well, I don't know if you know this, but that's where Winter Jam started.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so New Song went, which is an amazing story, but New Song had played the year before. They had done the first event and the youth group had gone. Some parents had taken the youth group and they loved it. And they said, okay. And that the only two things the student council has asked is for you to take them on a ski trip and to take them to the New Song concert. So the second year of what became Winter Jam, the second year New Song did it, the Greenville Memorial Auditorium, I volunteered as a counselor and I took my youth group. And so I went and saw 6,000 people with New Song. Saw Eddie Middleton, big Eddie Middleton, share the message of the gospel. Great, as good as anybody had ever heard. And I saw 400 people come forward to receive Christ at a New Song concert. And I went back to the counseling area and helped facilitate the counseling, you know. And so not knowing that in like just a couple of years, I was going to be in that group.
You're gonna be the man.
I had no idea what was about to happen, you know.
Now, is this Greenville, North Carolina or Greenville, South Carolina?
South Carolina.
Okay, so it's about an hour and a half from where I am right now from our studios. Yeah,
Greenville, South Carolina. That's where Winter Jam started. It was New Song and then New Song and Friends. And as it continued to grow, it became January Jam and then it became Winter Jam. But year number two, I was right there with them doing the, when it was just New Song at the Greenville Memorial Auditorium.
Yeah.
You know, and then a couple of years later, I was there with Clay Cross and Margaret Becker and, you know, Bob Carlisle and Russ Taff. And, you know, we're inviting guests to come in. Jackie Velasquez is just getting started. And, you know, through all those years, that's the beauty of if you hang around long enough. You have the opportunity to work with some remarkable people and you get to watch and unfortunately you get to watch some of them come in and do their thing and go.
Right.
But then there are others who are just faithful and committed and, you know, so it's amazing what happens when you just keep showing up.
While we're on the subject, is there a particular artist that you have especially enjoyed working with? Not to impugn on anyone else you have, but is there somebody that really stands out?
When I first got saved, I love music. I love music and grew up with it my whole life. And so when I got saved, I thought, you know, I need to find some Christian music to encourage me, but I couldn't find any that I really liked. But I found three artists early on in the early years that really blew me away. Brian Duncan was one of them. Bob Carlisle was one of the others. And then, I think the most influential Christian artist on me was Russ Taff because he was so different. As a matter of fact, when I first got saved, I was going to church and I got up early and I was getting ready to go to church and I had on the Ross Bagley TV show. Ross Bagley had a local television show in the Southeast and he would feature Christian artists. That's the first time I heard Truth. I heard Kim Noblett and Truth on that show. Many years before I was in Truth, but in particular, I saw Russ Taff and the Imperials on the Ross Bagley show, and he was singing "Praise the Lord," and I just fell in love with his voice. I just said, "That okay? If I'm gonna do Christian music, I need to be listening to this guy, right?"
Yeah.
So I listened to everything he did with the Imperials. I listened to every solo thing that he did, every word. I knew every nuance. Even when I started doing solo concerts, I sang a bunch of Russ Taff songs because he was my Adele. He was my whoever yeah. your great influence is. You know, for the guys right behind me, it was Michael English. Well, Russ Taff was my Michael English. He was the guy. So anyway, you can imagine how crazy it was for me then just a few years later for him to be a special guest with New Song on January Jam, or New Song and Friends, we called it at the time. And he said, why don't you guys just be my band? Why don't New Song just, would you guys mind learning three or four of my songs? So I'm on stage with Russ Taff singing We Will Stand and singing, you know, Old Buddha, because he likes it.
Oh, yeah. Song,
you know? So we learned Silent Love. We learned a bunch of his songs and got to be his band. Well, that started this crazy friendship, you know, that between me and Russ. And so we've toured together, done a lot of events together. We've spent a good amount of time together. We haven't been able to write together, but I'm hoping that's on my bucket list just because he's been so influential. And I'll tell you this, because you'll appreciate this. Many years ago, I was part of a project by Michael and Stormy O'Mardian called Child of the Promise. And it was like the Young Messiah tour, but it was a more modernized version of it.
Sure.
And Russ Taff was on there with me. It was me and Russ Taff and Aaron and Jeffrey. And it was Avalon was on there. Stephen Curtis was on that tour. Crystal Lewis was on that tour. And here I am right in the middle of all those icons. Right. And I played King Herod. I played Herod, King Herod. And so after the first night's rehearsal and I did my thing, I look over and Russ Taff is on the side of the stage doing his hands like he's bowing. He's like, you destroyed it. So he just, and I watched him encourage all the younger artists. I watched him and he was Gabriel in that musical and he was amazing. But
of course.
But he just encouraged, he poured himself out and he preferred everyone around him. He encouraged all the other artists. And I thought to myself, and I had, at this point, I had traveled with a lot of artists and some of them are just mean, frankly, they're really nice on stage and they can cry at the right points. But you and I both know some of them, the industry part of this can really harden your heart if you're not careful. Sure. And some of them, you know, they get to the point where they're just tired. I don't mean to be critical of them, but you know, some of them are just really tired and they're kind of going through the motions and they're trying to just get through till they can see some daylight. And, you know, you tend to be abrasive in some of those seasons. And if you're not careful, you can be unkind to people around you. I've never in my life, and I've known Russ now for 28 or 30 years, never in my Christian music life have I ever been with him where he wasn't kind to everyone around him. Not once where he wasn't an encourager. You know, so it would be hard for me to say that anybody else is my favorite. Now, singing with Michael W. Smith is pretty awesome. Singing with Amy Grant, that's stupid fun, you know, but, but still, you know, there's that guy that had such a profound impact on my life that only heaven will tell him. I keep thanking him and, you know, I try not to tear up when I talk to him about it because he tears up and hugs me back, you know, but
he is a crier. He was on the show.
He will cry. He will cry on you in a heartbeat.
He was on the show and yeah, it was, he's a talker, as you know. And so ended up being a two part because I had to, he had so much material. I had to make it two parts, but yeah. He cried a lot.
I adore him. Yeah, I adore him.
Such a great guy.
And you know what's funny is, you know, for me, he was Christian music for a long time. He won all the awards. He set the precedent for so long. And early on in my career, through mutual contact, I had the opportunity to tour with him as one of his backup singers and one of his road managers. And that was on the Walls of Glass tour. But I turned it down because I had just gotten married and just gotten off the road.
Mm-hmm.
And it killed me not to go on tour with
that. Yeah.
But, you know, now I look back, I've been married for 37 and a half years to the most wonderful woman on earth. And I realized that what I would have said to her if I had gotten right back on a tour bus, because when we dated, I was touring. So she dated me through all of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know? And so I just felt like I needed to establish, we needed some time together. And so, and Russ didn't get mad at me about that. And neither, you know, my wife, it still means something to her these years later because she knew what a sacrifice it was for me not to do that. She knew how important he was to me personally and, you know, musically. So, you know, but here we are having this conversation and I realize what you offer to the Lord in your attempts to do what's right, God gives it back to you in greater measure, you know, and I could pick up my phone right now and I could call Russ Taff and he'll answer it and say, and I'll say, hey man, I'm going to be in Nashville in a week. Can we get together? And he will say, absolutely. So that's a ridiculous gift to me. It probably wouldn't mean as much to a lot of other people, but to me, it's a huge kiss from God, you know?
That is awesome. He actually invited me after we did our interview last year. He actually invited me down for the Bell Buckle weekend. And so we went this past fall had a blast with him.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, I was going to tell you, if he invited you, he meant it.
Yeah.
He absolutely meant it. If he invited you to come down there, then he expects you to
come. Oh, I took him up. So. I mean, Russ Tapp just invited me to his house. Yeah, I'm going.
I'm packing a bag. Yeah, I
don't want to. Read another headline, watch and pray. Long ago you told me it would all turn out this way. The world is spinning fast, the end is near. Love and understanding, like time just disappeared. Those that live in you are not afraid. We're longing for the moment, we're waiting for the day.
Coming up for New Song, as we begin to close out this interview, you guys show no signs of slowing down. So what's on tap?
Well, you know, we're always writing songs. We don't necessarily just write songs for projects. We're always, you know, we like to write songs. One of the ways that we've stayed as relevant as we have by the grace of God is that we like great music. You know, we're excited about creativity. And so when someone comes along and they inspire us, you know, it causes us to want to get in the studio and write and to, you know, and so New Song has by the grace of God and with his help, we've been able to stay musically relevant over the years. And you know, we've done our best to not stuck musically and to play the kind of music and sing the kind of music that we like to listen to, you know? And yeah. So for us, you know, early on people used to say to us, well, you can't do that because you don't have an identity. And those people are not touring anymore. And we still are. So, you know, we're continually working on that. We're always working on Winter Jam. You know that we went out with We the Kingdom and with David Crowder and several other artists. We did 8 or 10 Winter Jam shows this year in the face of COVID, not knowing what was going to happen. Everybody thought we were nuts. But you know what? We followed protocol and it was a great success. And we're already working on Winter Jam for next year. We're working on a summer and fall tour right now. Eddie and I are even now just talking about the next writing sessions. I was on the phone with a producer a couple of days ago. So, you know, we're constantly just kind of pressing forward. It's funny because Eddie Carswell and Billy Goodwin have taught me one thing they've taught me is, and those two guys are the founders of New Song and that are still touring, in case your listeners don't know. Billy Goodwin is the great voice of the Christmas Shoes and Arise My Love. And he's the guy, he's the voice. And then Eddie Carswell is the songwriter, you know, who wrote those songs and so many others for Sandy Patty and Larnell Harris and lots of other people. He's written with Stephen Curtis and, you know, everybody. So, but those guys, they told me a long time ago, because I was like, okay, what's our 5-year plan? What's our 10-year plan? And Eddie and Billy both say, hey, we didn't know when we started this thing if the Lord was going to let us do it for a month or a year or what. And so we just we're on go, and we hold our hands before the Lord and we hold them open. We're not holding too tightly to anything. We just hold our hands open before the Lord and say, God, this is your ministry. This is Winter Jam's your tour. extreme youth events. Those belong to you, Lord. And so thank you for letting us be a part of it. And as long as you'll use us, we're available, and you make us able, and we'll go as long as we can go. And so that's kind of their approach. They're not doing this with an end in sight. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so that causes us to really, you know, look at the next thing. We're looking at the big picture. To be honest, I didn't know if New Song was going to survive COVID, because I didn't know what Christian artists were going to survive COVID.
Yeah.
Because it really brutalized touring artists and this whole process. And so, but here we are, you know, coming out on the other side of this, hopefully having learned a lot, understanding the importance of community. I think it all gave us a refreshing aspect as to the importance of our community and being together and concerts. And, you know, you do something over and over again. For a lot of people, concerts are an event. If you're not careful as an artist, it's just another day at the office. You're just going in, and, you know, it's normal for you to go in and check your ears, adjust the lighting, and get up on stage and go through your songs and, you know, go down to the merch table. And, you know, it's just, it becomes like a strange routine that 0.01% of people get to partake in. Right.
Right.
But for us, we've learned to be, and I really do believe this when I say it, we have gained a new appreciation for what we do and what we've been allowed to do, you know, and this May marked the 40th anniversary of the beginning of New Song. That's ridiculous that we've been allowed to do this for 40 years, and we're just humbled and grateful, and we just want to be faithful today. So we can't rest on that 40 years of God's faithfulness. Okay, Lord, what do you want us to say today? What do you want to say through us today? And where do you want us to be involved in? Lord, help us to hear what you have to say and to pour ourselves into it wholeheartedly and give you the glory when it works out good. You know what I mean? Glory when it works out good. And learn from you when it doesn't, when you've got something else planned. So I think that's one of the reasons New Song has kept its vitality, you know, and its influence and our opportunities. And God's been faithful. The end of the story is God has been faithful to us through all these years, and we're grateful for that.
That's incredible. I know New Song has some upcoming tour dates. So if you guys are coming through the Charlotte, North Carolina area, you know, give me a ring. Dinner's on me, man. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Tell your folks they can go to newsongonline.com, or they can just Google us, you know, like everybody else, and find us on social media. And you can, you'll find that information, upcoming information on Winter Jam. You can go to jamtour.com and actually, you know, you can download our app. There's lots of fun stuff and lots of early information. There's lots of ways to find us and to come be a part of what we're doing. And we love it. So we try to keep those things as fresh and available as possible. And folks can know, you know, we're already working on the fall tour. We're working on the Christmas tour. We're working on Winter Jam next year and Extreme. So we may be at home right now, but we're not resting.
Not for long, for sure.
That's right.
I tell you what, we'll also put those links in our show notes too, for everybody, so that they can just click on those. Much. Absolutely. Well, Russ Lee, singer, lead vocalist for the Christian iconic group New Song, and also a great songwriter as well. Thank you so much for being on Jesus Freaks today.
Oh, my pleasure. I love what you're doing. Thank you for reminding folks of where we've come from. This is kind of a music retrieval. This is nice. This is very nice.
Wonderful.
Hey, I want to thank Russ Lee once again for being on the show. Really enjoyed talking to him. What an incredible career and life he has. One little detail that we didn't cover in the interview that I should have is the fact that the night he got saved, he had a trunk full of drugs in the car. So here he was, a drug dealer, and getting saved, and he still had his drugs that he was supposed to sell in the car. It's an incredible story, and I'm glad we were able to tell it to you. Hey, if you like what you hear on this show and you want to support it, please visit our Patreon page. That's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. And you can donate for as little as $2 per month. we do need your help. There are expenses with putting on a podcast, including things like our website, which you can visit now at JesusFreaksPodcast.com. Go check it out. You can go back and listen to every episode we put out from season one on and catch up. But we can't do it without your support. So please consider going to patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and supporting this program. Next week, we're going to take a break from our normal format because it marks the 24th anniversary of the death of CCM's own ragamuffin, Rich Mullins. He left us an incredible legacy, and we want to celebrate his life, his music, and the message that he left behind. You're going to hear stories about Rich from some of your favorite artists in Christian music. It is going to be a great time, so I encourage you, check out our special tribute episode to Rich Mullins next week. Until then, you've been listening to Jesus Freaks, Vinyl to Digital, a preferred podcast of Way FM and part of the NewReleaseToday.com podcast network. It is produced and hosted by yours truly, Jason Huddle, with special thanks to research assistant Kevin Jewell. I now leave you with arguably Russ Lee's biggest solo hit, which I think sums up both his life and Rich Mullins. This is Live What I Believe. Until next week, God bless.
These are the days for the children of faith to stand up and be counted. Now is the time for the light in us to shine. Ever been the day